The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hyper local.
From here.
Philly rules, cheesesteaks, Bobby Clark, Will Smith. Your town sucks.
From here.
Hyper local.
One of the great privileges, and I really mean it, a privilege of living in Philadelphia. When I moved from a Midwestern town to Philadelphia so long ago, something that I did not have and I did not get to experience in my life growing up as a kid was professional hockey. Now, those of you in Philadelphia, at least most of you of a certain age, got to grow up with it and love your Flyers. I have always said that if I owned season tickets to any of the four teams in Philadelphia, I would own Flyers tickets. That's where I'd buy. And the one thing that I noticed right away, Fast Eddie, true or false, the very first thing I noticed when I started going to Eagles games, Phillies games, Sixers games, Flyers games, it didn't matter win or lose, the Flyers' attendance was always through the roof. True or false?
True, yes.
Flyers fans are diehard fans. And so you know, if you're a diehard Flyers fan, you know the name. Joe Thundermouth Watson, a legendary Flyers defenseman.
Oh, what an introduction.
How about that? You have just authored a brand new book called Thundermouth, and I'm honored to have you here today, my friend. Good morning.
Well, Chris, that's very nice. What an introduction. My goodness, God. Where are you from in the Midwest? Where in the Midwest are you from?
I come from Kansas City originally.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. The old Scouts, the home of the Scouts, for God's sake.
I got to see Kansas some minor league. For like a half a second, they had a minor league hockey team there called the Blades. And that was the only exposure I ever had to hockey until I saw the Flyers play. It's electric. Yeah. Joe, it's just an electric game, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I'll tell you, the game is fast. The game is speed, man. Speed kills in this game today. And if you look at the games, you watch the Flyers. I mean, nobody anticipated the Flyers doing as well as they have been doing this year. And I was over at a practice in September. I was over there doing some work, and I thought I'll watch the Flyer practice. And I could not believe the speed these guys are going in practice. And I says, I said to myself, this team is going to surprise a lot of teams in the National League this year, and they certainly have. And with good goaltending, the Flyers could be a very difficult team for anybody to play in the playoffs.
Now, Joe, here's what I want to know. You guys, in your day, you were part of the iconic Broad Street Bullies. That name came from your teams. And I feel like people of that era, I was not around for it, but people of that era who refer to your era seem to have more reverence for it. Is that simply because of the victories, the back-to-back victories, or was it a tougher game where the guys made of something tougher than they are today?
Well, I tell you, I think it's something of both because, when we came along and we won in 74, this team, this city was a dire need of something. They hadn't had a championship for years. And I think the Sixers won in 1966 or something, I'm not really a basketball fan, but we came along at the right time. The Vietnam was just getting over, and people needed something to cheer for, and we came along at the right time. A bunch of Canadian hockey players from the northern regions of Canada, and we were very well accepted in this area. In 1967, when I came to the expansion team for Boston, and I remember the first year we had a lot of trials and tribulations because we were something new. We were a new commodity, I guess you might say, in Philadelphia, and people didn't know much about hockey. But once you go to a hockey game, you're hooked. I went to an event last night, and they had about 1,000 Flyer fans at this event, and they were telling me stories when they were younger. They never went to a game, and their dad took them to the game, and they're very happy that their dad took them to a game and they've been hockey fans for 40, 50 years now. So people, once they get their grip on the hockey season ticket, they don't want to lose them, and they want to control them. And it just seems like, Chris, we came along at the right time, and the city needed something. And And, of course, the Broad Street Bullies, I mean, doesn't matter where you go in the world, people know about the Broad Street Bullies. I was on a plane about 5 years ago and back to British Columbia, and I sat next to a guy on the plane. He was from Australia. And our Broad Street Bullies show had just come out, and this guy had watched the show in New York in his hotel room for twice, and he said he never knew anything about hockey, but he became a hockey fan that day when he watched this. And then we had a friend. I had a friend of mine just came back from Czechoslovakia here, and he was over there. And he got off the plane and got in a cab. And the cabbie asked him where he's from, and he said Philadelphia. And the cabbie said home of the Bullies. Now you imagine that, home of the Bullies. This is 8,000 miles away. So obviously the Flyers are an iconic name, and they're known throughout the world pretty well. You know, it really is. You know, especially in Europe and America, obviously, and if you
were
go,
you guys, you, go, you I bet you, Joe, you won't brag on yourself. I'll bet you and Bernie were you guys and Bobby Clark were you guys truly? Do you think of yourselves as you look back on it as guys made of tougher metal than many who play today? I think a lot of us who are younger look back at a generation. Even before your time, you know, the World War II generation. We think of people in the past as being tougher and hardier and grittier. Do you think that's true or false?
Well, I kind of agree with you because I tell you, I grew up in the northern regions of British Columbia, 150 miles from Alaska, where it's 30, 40 below in the wintertime, and you got to be tough to survive those. And as young kids, we would go out and play hockey in 5 or 10 below zero, not 20 or 30 for sure. You know, it was our natural ice. And when you grow up in northern regions of Canada, you don't want to spend the rest of your life there. So my way out of there was through hockey, and I was happy to get out of that environment. Mind you, I go back there every summer. It's a beautiful area, but the winter times are very harsh, and you got to be tough. You got to be tough to be a hockey player. You lose your teeth, you break your leg. I broke my right leg in 13 places, end of my hockey career.
Oh, my gosh!
13 places. I broke my right leg in St. Louis. It's funny, I played my first game in St. Louis in 1963 as a minor leaguer for the Minneapolis Bruins, and in 1978, I ended my career on November the 11th, 78, in the same building, and I broke it, in, like I said, in 13 areas.
Oh,
and I had nine operations in my right leg, Chris, but I'm as good as new now. Yeah.
As someone born in Missouri, I apologize for St. Louis. I'll just tell you that right now. That's a anyway. Listen, Joe Thundermouth Watson, author of the brand new book. That's the title of the book. In fact, Thundermouth.
Yeah.
Tell me about that nickname, Joe.
Well, I'll tell you what. Ed Van Imp, one of my teammates, he coined that phrase. He says, "Christ, people can hear you in the third level." I would talk to people after a game. And Eddie and I would be together, and people say, "We heard you in the third level." I says, "What? Yeah, we could hear you in the third level." And Ed Van Imp says, "That's why we call him Thundermouth." I had a lot of nicknames, but one stuck with me. It was Thundermouth, Chris.
Do you, Joe, do you have an affinity for the old venue versus the Wells Fargo Center? I know people have very romantic memories of past venues in town versus the newer venues today. Do you feel that way or no?
Absolutely right. I mean, the building we have now is second to none, but you know what? It was the Spectrum was a very intimidating building, and I'll tell you, I had some friends on the Islanders. I talked, you know, there's a guy named Bobby Nystrom and Gary Howitt, a couple of guys I knew that went to my hockey school as a young boy, and I remember them, and they were tough guys for the Islanders, and I remember Bobby telling me, we'd be coming down 95, coming to play the Flyers, and we get on the Walt Whitman Bridge, and we look off in the distance, left-hand side, you can see the Spectrum. All of a sudden, the bus quieted right down. They knew they were going to war, and that's the way it was, man. It was eye for eye and a tooth for a tooth, Chris.
I'm so sorry I didn't get to see it. The Spectrum was literally, when I arrived in town for my very first visit, my very first interview, they were tearing the Spectrum down, so I never got to go in there.
You know what, Chris? It was full of, there was, you know, I mean, you know, you get these old buildings and everything else, man. Well, I mean, the building initially was, it cost $12 million to build. And, of course, we have that scoreboard in our new building. It cost $15 million, so it goes to show you how things have changed. But the Spectrum was intimidating. It pans right above the players, And it was a benefit to us. And then, of course, Kate Smith comes out and sings. That's another half a goal. So with the building and Kate Smith, they were good for a goal for us against the opposition.
Joe Watson, Joe Thundermouth Watson. His name is the brand new book called Thundermouth, as a matter of fact. Now, of course, your team most famous for back-to-back Stanley Cups, but also very famous, and I would ask you is, I mean, obviously back-to-back championships, you probably can't top that, but boy, people have deep, deep memories of that Red Army defeat in 76, right?
Yeah, you're right. You remember that, Chris? I guess you know what?
I've read of it. I didn't get to see it.
We played a game Sunday afternoon against the Russians, and Wednesday we had to go and play in Kansas City, the scouts. So Bobby Clark and I, we went for a walk in Kansas City. We went to a department store. This is in Kansas City. And we're walking around looking for this and that, and the guy comes up, and he looked at us, he says, "Are you guys the Philadelphia Flyers?" We said, "Yes." He said, "I want to congratulate you. I was never so proud of a hockey team beating the Russians the way you guys handled them." And this is in Kansas City, Chris, your hometown, for God's sake.
I'll be darned. This preceded me. I was born in 77, Joe, not to brag, but I just wasn't around to see that era of hockey. That's all, you know?
But we made such an impact in the league, and the league didn't like us. The president of the National Hockey League was Clarence Campbell at the time, and I remember playing the Russians, and we had a practice on a Saturday afternoon at the Spectrum, and the Russians practiced before us, so we watched their practice, and my God, the way they were moving, they were doing gyrations all over the ice, and we were watching them. I said, "Holy God, look at these guys." I'm glad we don't have to try to go out there and do it on the ice and do the things they were doing. But Freddie said, "We're going to have a practice." Then when he watched their practice, he said, "Oh, hell, you guys just go out there and do whatever you want and have a good time." And that's what we went out and did. So it was confusing for the Russians. But we had a banquet. We had a banquet in the Spectrum after our practices. And they had press from all over the world. And they were introducing the Russians. They got light plazas. Now they start introducing the Flyers. They come to number 8, Dave Schultz. Well, the Russians start looking around, and they're murmuring in between themselves and everything else, and I think they were somewhat intimidated. They didn't know what the hell was going to happen to them, but Clarence Campbell comes in the dressing room before the game against the Russians and says, "You have to uphold the prestige of hockey in North America. You have to win." And we more or less told him to get the hell out because he didn't like us. He didn't even want to come on the ice and present us a Stanley Cup, and we won those 2 years. And so he left with his tail between his legs, and Fred Shero says, "We're going to win for ourselves. We're going to show them. They have the Iron Curtain in Russia. We're going to show them the Iron Curtain in North America." And that's what we did, and we just annihilated them and could have beat them 10-1 if Tretiak, the great Russian goalie, hadn't stopped all our shots. We outshot them 49-13, Chris.
Wow. And in fact, I read that your coach said
– incredible.
Yeah, I read your coach said of that game, "This set Russian hockey back 20 years." I love that quote.
Yeah, that was me, man. We were in a shorthanded situation in the second period, and I was watching the Russians make a line change, and they were taking their time, and I said, "Oh, geez, I'm going to amble up the ice with Don Selesky and Orest Kinnerchuk." And Selesky takes his shot, and he keeps it low, and Tretiak hits his pads, and it bounces out, and I just happened to come in there following the play, and tapped it into the net, and I proved one thing, Chris. White man can't jump, man. I tried to jump. I probably jumped 3 inches off the ice, and that was it. But I was very excited, obviously.
Joe, after your playing career, I know you stuck around with the Flyers for quite a while. Something like four decades, you worked with the Flyers front office. Why did you decide to stick around Philadelphia? What does Philadelphia mean to you, the fans in this town?
Well, you know what? Both of my kids were born here in Philadelphia, and it was a great area, and we were very well accepted. And the people that, you know, when they go to sporting events, the women work hard all day, and they've taken care of their kids, and they want to go relieve their frustration. So they go to a hockey game, and women are very fierce in the game, man. They're very serious, and that they take their frustrations. They can't take it out on their kids, so they take their frustrations out on the hockey team and the opposing team but anyway, this was an area where I didn't mind going back to Canada in the summertime, but I wanted to make my home in Philadelphia. And we have about 12 or 13 players from our Stanley Cup team that still live in this area. So obviously it goes to show you that this is a wonderful area, and people appreciate your efforts and your hard work, and we're very well accepted in the community. It doesn't matter where you go. I had a policeman approach me a while back, and he said, Brad Marsh started our Warriors team, and it consists of guys that were in the wars, and anyway, I had this policeman come up to me. He says, you know, you guys saved my son's life. I says, what do you mean? He says, well, he was a cop, and he came back from the war, and his wife and him had problems, and he came home to an empty house, and you guys came along at the right time and started this Warriors hockey program, and it saved my son's life.
Wow.
And isn't that incredible, somebody telling you something like that? So
that
obviously the Flyers alumni, we had the finest alumni, Chris, in all of the National Hockey League and probably all of sports. We do so much for the community. I'm not saying other teams don't, but we do more for the community than anybody.
I will just tell you, from the day I hit town and got to know the organization and specifically meet the alumni, the most charming group of guys you're ever going to meet. You bleed the town. You love the team. You're just all so warm and welcoming. I just love it. I'm so glad you wrote this book, Joe, and it's out there now. People can grab it if they want. Thundermouth, right?
Yeah, Thundermouth. If you're looking to buy the book, it's joewatsonofficial.com.
JoeWatsonOfficial.com. Snap it up. Every Flyers fan must have it. Thundermouth. Joe, it's a pleasure to talk with you. You're welcome back anytime, sir.
Well, Chris, thank you very much, and I hope I get a chance to meet you one of these days.
Deal. Consider it done. Yeah. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, we'll meet you one of these days, by gosh, and we'll have a Bubba Louie or something. Bubba Louie's are a slang for Canadian beer. All right?
Deal. Done and done.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joe. Have a great day.
Take Chris. Thank you. Pleasure, my friend. Bye-bye.
Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle. This is Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer. 3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.